Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you feel like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. And not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real, hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
What does it mean to be Black and middle class and growing up in the age of the internet? Skateboarding became a segue into a camera, into filmmaking, and into photography. So that's when I realized that's what a fashion picture could be. It's not a thousand things that I kind of thought about in a fictional way.
The first Black photographer to take a photo for the cover of American Vogue in over 100 years. What do you make of the fact that there was no Black photographer before you who had that opportunity?
It's one of those things that doesn't dawn on you until you hear that fact. And I realized that I was about to do something very important.
Hi, this is Imran Ahmed, founder and CEO of The Business of Fashion. Welcome to the BOF podcast. This week on Inside Fashion, I sit down with a new fashion phenom. 24-year-old Tyler Mitchell made fashion history last year when he shot the cover of US Vogue featuring Beyoncé. It was the first time a Black photographer had shot a cover for Vogue in over 120 years. But Tyler, as all fashion people do, has an amazing and interesting backstory. So I sat down with him for this week's podcast to learn about what it was like growing up in Atlanta, Georgia, his time in New York, his new transatlantic fashion jet set life, and all of the tips and tricks that he's learned along the way on how photography is changing and how he's shaping his own career. So here's Tyler Mitchell, Inside Fashion. Good afternoon, Mr. Tyler Mitchell.
Hi, Imran. Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having
you
me.
You have come to London on the hottest day in history.
It's so hot.
We are so hot. We are in the BOF HQ, which is unusually quiet today because most of our team has decided to work from home, which means we'll have silence, hopefully. But thank you for stopping by on a warm day.
Thank you.
What brings you to town?
Shooting a couple commercial projects and things.
Okay.
That I can't talk too much about, but I'm always here now.
Yeah, like London.
I have a girlfriend here now.
Oh, wow.
And just I have lots of friends here now. I feel like I split the time, basically. I keep making the joke. Because I've done like 10 different projects, some personal, some here, some there. But I think 7 or 8 of them have been in London or in Europe. Okay. So I keep finding myself here one way or another.
Amazing. Yeah. And 1 year ago, yeah, about this time, you were shooting the Beyoncé cover somewhere in the countryside. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that a bit later. Yeah. But I wanted to start like much earlier on because you're obviously like this, you know, prodigy. But I'm always interested in learning how people discover what their talents are. Mm-hmm. And I know that you grew up in the US, but do you want to just tell us a little bit about, you know, what life was like for you growing up, what you were interested in, like what were the things that
were kind of piquing your curiosity and shaping your day-to-day life?
I mean, I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, which is a very, when you come over here, most people don't even know where that is. They can't even point it out on a map. Like over here, I mean, in London and in Europe, but it's like the capital of the South in a way. So it is a metropolis and it's got a lot of, you know, history and background of kind of, you know, racial and identity politics among it. You know, it's kind of a liberal city, but then it's got a kind of conservative outside. It's very reflective of the United States in a way, Georgia.
What do you mean it's reflective of the United States?
I mean, we're dealing with the big divide right now between cities and rural and suburban areas. Like, you know, people in the middle of the country and more rural areas are, you know, moving more conservative and metropolises are moving more liberal. So Atlanta and Georgia are kind of a like microcosm version of that, like a little mini version of that. And I guess I just grew up in that. And I grew up in the suburbs of Atlanta, basically quite normal middle-class kid doing sports, like trying to play like three sports and be accepted normally until I started skateboarding. Because I don't know why. I just loved it. I was like such a YouTube kid. So I would just go on YouTube and like look up how to skateboard or how to ollie on a skateboard, or I want to teach myself. So
how to ollie on a skateboard. Is that a skate move?
Yeah, that's like how you jump.
Okay, to ollie.
Yeah.
See, I learned something new today.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that I would just look those things up, and basically skateboarding became a segue into a camera, into filmmaking and into photography, because so many skateboarders, you know, film each other. They form communities. They kind of like band together and make little videos and little crews and then upload them to YouTube. So I'm very much from that. Those are my beginnings, weirdly, like kind of a bit far away from fashion, a bit more like skateboarding, music videos, just uploading things to YouTube, uploading things to Tumblr. That was my origin story.
So, you know, it's always easier to connect the dots when you look backward. I think it was Steve Jobs who said that. But if you look backward and connect the dots to your growing up in Atlanta in this city where racial identity is a big, you know, presence, where you're growing up in the suburbs as a middle-class kid, where you're doing skateboarding and uploading to YouTube, like how have all of these different things kind of led you to photography, do you think?
I mean, I guess the skateboarding part is very big in the way of community, and in the way of like, I guess, image making. So many people come from that, you know, naturally. Spike Jonze came from skateboarding. You know, he was making full length skate videos before he got into advertising. So many DOPs, cinematographers, directors. So it's a natural like filmmaking thing that I think grew that part of my brain. You know what I mean? But then I think Atlanta and being middle class and that whole part, I don't know. I just, there's something that I'm now going back to in my photography, like that I'm now trying to revisit. What does it mean to be black and middle class and growing up in the age of the internet? Because you have so much time to like dive into the lives of others. Like I was watching, you know, Odd Future videos, skater kids like me who are in California and who are creative and making their own thing. So I had my own like set of heroes, you know, through the internet. So I think that is more the middle class thing. And that is more the kind of growing up in the South thing, is you're able to kind of dream of going to other places and like making images and like making skate videos here with this person or making music videos. So it was really community video making and like daydreaming, I would say, that I was doing a lot of.
Can you tell me a bit about your heroes? Who were your heroes? Like who and why?
I mean, so many, but Spike Lee for one, you know, just being a pioneer in black filmmaking. Tyler the Creator for kind of enterprising and ownership of his stuff, for his music, for his just for his overall, you know, energy and output. Let me think. Paul Thomas Anderson, weirdly, I don't even know if he would be directly like a connection. You know, he's not thinking about me when he's making movies, but those movies just did something to me. And my dad also raised me watching like Alfred Hitchcock and things like this. So he weirdly raised me on movies too. He took me into like art house cinemas to go watch Drive and things in Georgia. So a lot of more movies and a lot more kind of movies and musicians. And then as I'm learning more about fashion, it's like people are telling me about models, you know what I mean? And do you know what I mean? This whole idea of like the models from the 90s and things like this. And I'm like, I didn't know about that. Like that wasn't in my
vocabulary.
I was born 95.
Okay, so you were like the 90s models, you were still a toddler.
Exactly.
Right. So if those were your heroes,
yeah.
I know you studied at Tisch.
Yeah.
So let's talk about how you go from Atlanta to New York City.
Yeah.
And how, like, does it like blow your mind to make that
leap? A big jump. I made a whole film about that. For American Eagle, actually.
Okay.
Because when I got to New York, everything changed. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's such a big jump from Atlanta, where my scope is here. And I thought, oh, maybe I just want to go to film school. And then you get to New York, and that's like the hub of fashion, of creativity, of so many people, with Instagram also kind of like booming at the time I moved, which was 2013. Like, I was able to see what Grace Wells Bonner is doing in 2014 at Central St. Martin's, or able to see what this person's doing. So my whole field of view was just going like this. It was just expanding. And basically New York opened up the possibility to work with brands, to work and to actually support myself in terms of, I want to support myself making images. So like the American Eagle video I made was very much about that story, moving to New York. You should watch
it sometime. I will watch it. Maybe we'll embed it in the post, so anyone who's listening
and
can
I star
watch
myself
it
in it.
You
too.
Star yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That was a hard one.
And is that where you first connected with fashion? Because like Atlanta's not known for being a fashion city. Mm-mm. How did that?
It's weirdly, it doesn't really have any fashion taste or like community at all, which is weird. But no, it was through New York for sure. Like, who is the first person I might have met?
What I was going to ask you. So,
yeah?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think. I remember that I was casted for this American Eagle thing.
Okay.
And I do remember that because, I mean, I was always reading Dazed, you know, and British magazines, which was kind of subconscious. You know, again, that's through the Tumblr and the Pinterest thing. It's just you come across Dazed articles or you look at videos on Nowness. And that's part of just the vocabulary of growing up, you know, at that time and being on Instagram at 2013, 2014, 2015 area. But the first experience, actually the first person I really met, like a fashion photographer, was Cass Bird, basically.
Okay.
Because she shot me for that American Eagle campaign, and I was so curious. I was like, what is this? What is that? I'm pointing around the set, like, what's that like? And what's like, what's your DP doing? And how does, I was seeing how a campaign was run in a way. Like, I didn't know what that looked like, and that this was imagery that was going to be used to sell clothes. Like, I didn't see the inner workings of that until I met Cass.
How did you get cast in the thing?
Cass? How did I get cast? This girl named Amrit, who works at Starworks Group.
Yeah.
She cast me.
Like you're off the street or something.
I was out and about. Like, I mean, I was kind of a, like, in the social scene of like, I was within the realm of people she was probably looking for. Like,
sure.
I would be out at parties, but I was mostly like an NYU kid, you know, but yeah. NYU has so much brush up against fashion in New York because Fashion Week is going on and kids go to cool parties and then things like that.
Yeah. It's interesting how many creative people I've met recently, young creative people, who actually discover that there's so much more to fashion than they actually know from just the images that are created. Like, mm-hmm. they don't understand mm-hmm. how much it takes to create the image. And a fashion shoot set is like an amazing place to see all of the different types of creatives working together.
It's insane.
Yeah.
I'm still learning that right now.
Yeah.
Like, I was having this conversation yesterday. Like, it's insane how much goes into these images, making these images.
It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I always get really excited before shoots because sometimes you're bringing together a group of creative people who've never really worked together before. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of incredible to see it happen.
That's,
you know, once I got to participate on the set of Tim Walker when he was shooting Sinead Burke for our cover.
Oh, wow.
And that was just incredible because you could see the creative process happening in real life. It was amazing.
I love that cover picture too.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Sinead is amazing.
She really is.
Yeah.
Shout out to Sinead. So you're at Tisch.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the social scene.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting cast in these
campaigns
and you're doing
it's all
this
very
thing.
Weird and new.
But was there a specific moment where you realized that you wanted to make your career as a photographer, an image maker?
The photography came from a few things. Also weird kind of like London connections. There is a photographer whose name is Cisse,
mm-hmm.
Who's very much more in the music world, who came over to New York from London, and he was like, you know, he was doing his thing. He was kind of photographing. He was known for photographing rappers backstage. He was more on the music side. He was photographing like Drake, and he was photographing Skepta at the beginning of the grime boom and like the pop world. He was photographing, you know, ASAP Rocky and then Virgil, you know, in very early days. So there is some crossover with fashion. But he came to New York and we connected on Instagram and he stayed with me. And he was the first person who showed me the workings of a film camera, his equipment, and from a photography side. Because remember, I was going to like film school. So actually, he came over from London and showed me how to kind of be a photographer in a way. He was more going to clubs and like photographing these important figures backstage. So I was already drawn to this like idea of documenting important figures and like kind of being a photographer. But I literally just watched what he was doing. He brought me places during Fashion Week. And I bought the exact same camera he had. I remember that. I went to eBay the day he left and I was like, I want that camera. And it was a very cheap, inexpensive, like point and shoot film camera. And I started constructing my own shoots. This was in 2015. And so maybe 2 months later, I went to Havana, Cuba through NYU because they offer like a, you know, abroad program there and an exchange with a photography program in Havana. And I don't know why I picked it, but basically
one. That's an amazing place to take pictures, Havana.
Amazing. That's where everything started.
What did you do in Havana?
That was 4 weeks there, maybe a little more. And it was just a documentary photography program. There was this amazing teacher who was just pushing us to do different exercises. Go out and do this. Go out and shoot that. So the first day that he brought everyone together, you know, we would do all these exercises each week. We would have to photograph something, bring in pictures, do critiques, things like that. I'd never experienced this because, again, I was on the film side of things. And Adrian, the teacher, first said, I want everyone to bring in their pictures, just pre-existing pictures. They can be iPhone camera roll pictures. They can be shoots you've done, whatever. I just want to understand where everyone's at, what everyone's into, and so on and so forth. And I brought in some of my little shoots from that camera I bought. Mm-hmm. I bought that eBay camera. And just constructed shoots with friends. And he looked at the pictures and he immediately said, these look like fashion pictures to me. And I was like, what are you talking about? I kind of, in a way, like took a bit of offense
right,
to it.
Right, you thought that was a kind of insult.
I don't know what I thought. Right. I was, you know.
Because like, if you're a serious photographer, maybe doing fashion photography is seen as a little superficial or something.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what I thought. But I was like, what do you mean by that? Because I don't know the first thing about, like, you know, the history of Louis Vuitton or I don't know, things like that. Right. So I was very new. And he was like, well, they look like fashion pictures. It looks like you dressed this person up in clothes, didn't you? And I said, well, yeah, that's what I did. I put my friend in a sweater I liked and I thought they looked cool and the sweater just came from my closet. He said, well, that's a fashion picture.
You styled them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and you art directed it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't pure documentary because people weren't just as the way they were.
Exactly.
Right.
So that's when I realized that's what a fashion picture could be. It's not a thousand things that I kind of thought about in a fictional way. It was very concrete.
So you come back from Cuba and you're like, you've got this kind of better understanding of where your career might go. So what did you go out and do?
I made a book from those pictures in Cuba. I had all of this material that I documented of skateboarders and architecture. And I sent the pictures to a writer here in England named Ashley Kane. Mm-hmm. She's the arts editor at Dazed. And they wrote about my pictures. That led to like a relationship with Dazed and they commissioned me to do fashion things. And that's how it really avalanched.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the first time I came across your photos was when you did the, I was obsessed with Emma Gonzalez.
Oh yeah.
And when I saw those pictures on the cover of Teen Vogue.
Yeah.
First of all, I thought it was really cool that Teen Vogue was covering topics like that.
Yeah. At a really good time.
Yeah. And it was so important what they were doing. And I've become really obsessed with Generation Z because everyone has their eye rolling reflections on millennials. Mm-hmm. But when I meet Gen Z, you're Gen Z, right?
Technically, I am on the border.
Yeah.
What is Gen Z?
I mean,
what
it's like after
that?
96, I think. 95, okay, 96.
So I'm right.
Yeah.
I'm 95, yeah.
But I was really into what those students were doing around gun control.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really cool
that
Teen Vogue put them on the cover. And then that's when I first saw your photos. Can you talk to us about that shoot and how that all, like, how did you get into Teen Vogue all of a sudden?
Yeah, that was another one where it was like,
For years, I was knocking on the doors of magazines. You know, once I had sent pictures to Dazed, I was quite fearless about kind of reaching out to people who weren't, you know, across the ocean. Like, so I was kind of reaching out to Teen Vogue, and I was reaching out to magazines in New York, document journals and things like that. And I met the photo director once. We had an amazing conversation. I was very, like, politically charged up, like, talking about, you know, what was going on with gun violence. A project that I did for Dazed, actually a first commission, featured a lot of pictures of boys with water guns, and kind of allusions to, or playfulness around, or kind of like, kind of my way of dealing with what was happening in 2015 and 2016 with Philando Castile, Sandra Bland, and other police violent killings in America. So, I was just very charged up already about, like, police violence, killings and guns in America. And we just had this amazing conversation, myself and the photo director. And when Emma Gonzalez came along, it was just like, it's time. Like, we have to do something now before, especially that was right before the March for Our Lives, which was the Kids Run, you know, rally in D.C.
Yeah, in D.C., yeah.
So it was just one thing after another. Like, 2015 was such a charged time. 2016 was such a charged time with Mike Brown, with Eric Garner, both being killed. And then, yeah. So at that point, I think my work was also like edging on activism and politics in a way.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the whole fashion industry seems to be finding its voice when it comes to addressing these kinds of issues. And I think it's really powerful when we can.
No.
And so that's how you met Raoul from Condé Nast, right?
Yeah,
and exactly. That's what ultimately led to the cover that kind of made you, you know, this phenomenon. And, you know, I think, you know, when people talk about that cover and, you know, the first Black photographer to take a photo for the cover of American Vogue in over 100 years, I think 120 years or something.
I think 126.
126 years. First of all, what do you make of the fact that there was no Black photographer before you who had that opportunity?
It's kind of insane because I guess it's one of those things where I knew that Gordon Parks and there were Black photographers that were shooting insides for Vogue and Harper's Bazaar. You know, Gordon Parks did some fashion stories in Paris and things like this, but it's one of those things that doesn't dawn on you until you hear that fact. And
did you know that when you were taking it? Like, it hadn't
I knew it when
framed.
I was taking it.
Okay, yeah.
I knew it when I was taking it because I did my homework and I realized that I was about to do something very important. And I think that was also a conversation with the magazine, like, and also a conversation, you know, with Beyonce and her team, was that this moment was so important within
fashion.
Did you
feel pressure? How, you were 23, right?
I felt pressure.
Well, so that must have been so hard. Yeah. Like, you could, it's this historic moment. It's Beyonce and it's Vogue.
Yeah. The weird thing is, I did feel a pressure, but also the way I am when I'm taking pictures is very, like, everything's very natural and free. Like, it was such a close and intimate dynamic. And, like, even when I met Tim, you know, when I
Tim
met
Tim Blanks.
Yeah, Tim Blanks. And I met him once and he had some similar questions. You know, he's like, did you feel pressure? And then we talked for maybe 20 minutes. Tim was like, I see now how, you know, you got those pictures of Beyonce. Because you're just such a, you're just, it's like a breath of fresh air. You're a very easygoing person.
That's so nice from Tim to say that. That's a big compliment. You know how much we love our Tim here.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? For me, I got a chef-grade range recently, and now I'm cooking new things every single night. Seriously, no cuisine is off limits. The point is, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. I can picture myself with a car full of groceries, cruising down the highway, soaking up the sun with the available dynamic sky panorama glass roof. Ugh, pure bliss. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX. Luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you feel like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. And not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real, hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
So you weren't feeling pressure, but you were conscious and aware of the importance of what was happening. Mm-hmm. So I know you have talked about this elsewhere, but for the benefit of our listeners, walk us through that day. What was it like?
It was an amazing day because first off, I remember it started with, meeting Yvette, who is like the mother, kind of like fairy godmother of the Beyonce camp. She's her publicist. She's working with me closely over the internet, but we had never met and we were so excited to kind of hug on the set. But she already had such a warm energy and such like a positive outlook on the moment. I think she knew the weight of the moment, and she knew that we were also talking about at breakfast on the day of the shoot, what was going to be the text of the editorial, what was going to be the interview, or what was going to be anything. So, as you might know, like that whole text was her talking about the importance of the moment of the shoot, what's been going on in her life, what it is to be growing older, having babies, and also just everything in her artistic journey. But specifically with the moment, I think I could tell Yvette knew from day one that we met on the shoot that this was going to be very important. So that was the energy going in. That was she. And I remember her telling me, she was actually tossing around ideas. She said, maybe you and her interview each other. And I said, what do you mean by that? Like, you mean for the article? She was like, yeah, maybe. I don't know. We're trying around ideas. She very much knew that this was important, that the dialogue between her and I was important. So that was just the day. It was very clear, open dialogue. She was very warm. Raul was there and Vogue was very warm. So it was actually like the best experience you could have, really.
And then after the cover came out, and there was obviously that big hoopla, and it was like in the media everywhere, and everybody was talking about it. Did things change for you? Did people talk to you differently? Did your career take a completely different trajectory? Were people banging on your door? Like, what happened?
It definitely did maybe accelerate things. Mm-hmm. When I shot the cover, I didn't have an agency, which is a big thing for a photographer. I was talking to agencies, but I didn't have an agency. So,
well, this cover must have helped that a little bit. Yeah.
Definitely. And you know, that has changed exponentially just in terms of like my work and my output. That changes things about how you move through the world when you have an agency backing you. So
how
that
do you
can
know which agency to go with? Like, you there must have been more than one. Like, how do you figure out if you're a young photographer?
So hard.
Yeah.
It's kind of like record labels. You know, it's a really big thing in an artist's career or in a photographer's career. And a lot of the past year and a half before the cover, I was meeting with kind of every single one that I could. So I was doing my homework and I was kind of seeing who was around. And I also worked at one. I was an intern at Art Partner, who I'm now represented by. And working there taught me a lot about the inner workings, again, of fashion photography. So a lot of that was research and homework, and I try to pass that advice on to other photographers, like, here's who you should be talking to, or here's who could help out, you know, because photographers, there's no roadmap for, like, what you're supposed to do in your career, and there's no kind of, like, you know, ultimate guide to being a successful photographer. What happened to me accelerated my career, you know, but in a big way.
I think you also deserve more credit, because in everything that you've already said in our conversation thus far, it's very clear to me that you made an effort, that you worked hard, that you, you know, went and interned at an agency, that you asked questions on the photo set when you were there. And sometimes that gets lost on people because they see this, like, media story or media narrative around success, and it seems like it happens overnight, and it happens effortlessly. And whenever I'm giving advice to people, I'm like, nothing happens without effort and hard work, you know?
And especially, like, with timelines now, like, on Instagram, there's literally, there's condensed, like, time and space where someone's, and I kind of make a joke out of it on my Instagram because my life has definitely accelerated in ways in the past year. And so I do these posts that are all about teleportation and travel, which is all about every time I travel somewhere, I make these routine kind of teleportation posts because our sense of time and space is cramped, basically. You know, people are posting highlights on their Instagram and they're posting, you know, media worthy moments, but they're not posting the years in between and the questions. And the mundane stuff that you have to ask, or that interning teaches you, or that asking questions teaches you. So yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
So now that you have an agency, that means they also get you commercial work, right? Which is, you know, given that one of your first experiences was an American Eagle video, maybe that's not, you know, distasteful to you, the commercial side of things. But I know another thing that young creative people sometimes grapple with is balancing the need to do commercial work that generates an income with the stuff that really drives them creatively. Like, how do you work through that?
It's always a balancing act. It's like weighing two things on a scale or something. Like, it's just, for me, I've never run away from commercial work. A lot of that had to do with the fact that I was living in New York. I was going to an expensive school. I knew I wanted to support myself with image making. I didn't really see a plan B. I was that kind of, like, ruthless in a way. But a lot of it is, like, also, I really actually, for me, enjoy, in a way, making commercial pictures. Like, those things are ways to, the American Eagle thing I took as a way to kind of make a narrative about what an American, you know, man could look like. When I was in the malls, like, I didn't see people that looked like me on those ads for American Eagle.
What do you mean?
Well, they didn't have curly hair. They didn't have brown skin. They weren't black. Like, a lot of those models. And they also, and I read some great articles actually on Business of Fashion about this, about how those retailers had to, right? You tell me, have to kind of reshape or rechange their business and tell more interesting narratives. They couldn't just kind of sell back this idealized, chiseled version of a man who's shirtless with American Eagle trunks, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's still an ongoing issue, I think, in our industry. I mean, everyone's thinking more broadly about what beauty is and what the kind of ideal customer looks like or target customer looks like. And I think one of the big gaps that we've seen kind of open up is that there's such a big difference between, I think, the way the fashion industry has traditionally projected itself versus the people that are actually consuming the products and taking in the imagery. And as fashion becomes this, like, much more global, much more diverse industry, you know, there's a long way to go before we kind of find the right balance.
Yep. That's kind of the playing field that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
That idea of what beauty is. Do you know what I mean?
So how does that manifest now in the way, now you're a more seasoned photographer. I mean, you're still very young, but you've got some good experience under your belt. Like, where do you think you can take it from here? What are your goals?
I look at people like Gordon Parks. I look at people like Spike Lee. I look at just other pioneers who kind of decided, I'm going to change. I see that movies are one way, or I see that images are another way. and I'm going to just change what that's all about. So that's kind of my driving force, like my, you know, thesis statement.
Mm-hmm.
I would like for images, and right now I've been kind of doing that within the fashion space, to shape how we view identity, how we view beauty. You know, a lot of amazing Black photographers have been doing this before me too, so it's not the newest thing. There's been Kwame Braithwaite, you know, there's been people like Malik Sidibe, who have been photographing their own communities and saying, this is beautiful. Do you know what I mean? These people in Mali are beautiful in my portrait studio. Or, you know, Gordon Parks is saying, these young impoverished boys in Alabama are beautiful. Like, those kind of narratives to me really excite me. So that's my kind of like driving goal, is to also do that for right now within the fashion space.
Mm-hmm.
It to me felt very narrow for a minute. And mm-hmm. I like that it's opening up. I like that BOF is writing so much about it. Like, I read that, you know, 9 out of every 10 millennials wants to see a brand have, you know, a stance on social justice issues.
Yeah.
And that that millennials only in the US like represent, what was it, $350 billion of spending power?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the numbers by heart, but that sounds reasonable. And that, you know, what's interesting is those, if you take those metrics and you apply them globally, there's even more millennials in China and India.
Right.
So like, these are the people. And what's amazing for me as I travel around the world, I, of course, you notice the differences of cultures and people in different countries, but I also feel like in a way, young people are more similar in China and in India and in South America and the US than they are different now, because wow. They all have access to the same technology and the same, you know, they're all following the same musicians and mm-hmm. fashion brands. And it's cool because it kind of levels the playing field for everyone, but it also, I think that's why there's so much of this impetus now for the industry to catch up with its customers.
Yep.
So who are you really excited about in fashion right now?
Oh boy, that's a hard question. Who are you excited about? Who are you excited by?
I love Craig Green.
Yeah?
A lot.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I just got a new Craig Green jacket. And you know what's amazing about Craig Green is I love it from a fashion point of view, but I wear it in a normal, non-fashion context. And everyone says, oh, I love that jacket. Right. Where is it from?
It has like a, doesn't it have kind of a, since it's, it feels like it's pulled from so many kind of different places. Like, you kind of see, you know, like allusions to Japanese culture with some of the shapes and silhouettes, but then also like a bit African. They're like, but then it's brought down and reduced to something very anonymous. Like, that
and
is very
also,
global.
It has the same DNA that he's had from his very first collections.
Yeah.
So he's one of those designers who managed to like find his voice mm-hmm. and keep kind of refining it and evolving it and mm-hmm. bringing in different references and different, I mean, I love it. So I told you mine.
Yeah.
Who are you excited about?
I mean, I love Grace Wales Bonner.
Okay.
I mean, I think.
She was one of my students.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. At St. Martin's.
What?
Yeah. I mean, she's amazing. So tell me why you love her so much.
She's just incredible. Ever since the moment I saw her images, I remember she did a project in Senegal with Harley Weir. I remember she did a fashion shoot here. No, it wasn't a fashion shoot. It was a fashion show. Here, wasn't it, at Central St. Martin's, her graduate collection.
Which was
amazing.
Amazing.
Ever since those moments, I mean, the idea of what a Black man is and can be from her point of view, it just did something to me.
Yeah.
I mean, the clothes themselves and the world both kind of speak to something that I felt I was feeling all the way across the ocean. The idea that a Black man could be something that is more effortless, more sensitive, or just that pushback against maybe what I just had seen before. But it just felt new to me.
There's also a gender element in what she's approaching, right? So it's about, you know, I was at that graduate collection show, and, you know, you see so many of those collections all at the same time, but there's certain ones that stick in your head. And that was a way you'd never seen a Black man before on a runway.
Exactly.
You know?
But also it was subtle. Like, I think over all things, it was new, and new things are fun and exciting, but it was subtle. It had a quietness and a beauty that was like, especially amongst maybe what my idea of fashion was before, which is bigger, more, you know, different shapes and things that kind of like dealt in in ideas of like gluttony or like, you know, kind of being over the top or camp or whatever, you know. This was quite like subtle and quiet and still beautiful.
Because she's quiet and subtle, right? Which is if you like.
Yeah.
Have you collaborated with her ever?
Well, no, but we've just been hanging out.
Okay.
And just talking, and we've never collaborated. We were close. We keep talking about it.
You should. I think you guys could do amazing things.
Hopefully. We did give a talk at my first exhibition. I invited her to come be on a, you know, we did a one-on-one at my exhibition in Amsterdam this year, which
was
fun.
Maybe we should get you and Grace to speak at Voices or something and do something on stage together.
That'd be fun. We should do that.
I will follow up on that. Tyler, I'm getting really hot. but we had a nice chat.
Yeah.
And we're not cutting it off, but, you know, it's so nice to talk to someone who's so passionate and curious.
Thank you.
And, yeah, keep doing what you're doing. It's really amazing.
Thank you. Podcasts are hard.
They aren't hard.
Yes, they are.
No, you did a great job. It's just a chit-chat.
All right.
Yeah, you did a good job.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you. And I'm going to sign off because I am definitely going to melt. And so is Yara, our lovely producer who's sitting with us. So I'm Imran Ahmed, founder and CEO of The Business of Fashion. That's all for Inside Fashion this week from 100 degree Fahrenheit London. And hopefully it's going to cool down soon. But anyone who's wondering if global warming is real, I can tell you the evidence is in my office. That's all for now. See you next week. If you enjoyed this conversation, you might also be interested in joining BOF's global membership community, BOF Professional. Our members receive exclusive deep dive analysis in our Daily Digest email, as well as unlimited access to our archive of over 10,000 articles, our new iPhone app, special print issues, and all of our online courses and learning materials from BOF Education. For a limited time only, we are offering our podcast listeners an exclusive 25% discount on your first year of an annual BOF Professional membership. To get this special offer, click on the link in the episode notes, select the annual package, and enter the special code PODCAST2019 at checkout. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. Please leave us a rating if you did, and don't forget to share it with your friends.